No, Dale said, smiling. I know what I'm doing. Dark matter? Gree technology, Dale? You're playing with something beyond anything we can even hope to understand. Lannery nodded at the bodies still steaming and twitching in the corner. You heard them. Even they said that thing is at the edge of known science, and edges break away. Gather it up, Dale said to his stargazers. He turned his back on Lannery. There was another explosion somewhere far away. Dale, what have you done? She asked. She stood slowly, holding onto a wheeled tool cart for support. The Cathar watched her, his gun at the ready. Started a little fight. Dale turned to face her again. For an instant, she felt a flush of memories, but they were all good ones of her time with her brother. They did not belong here. With whom? I arranged that the Newell Tandor Dome would find out about Pan Deep's continuing business with the Jedi, and they hate them. Many survivors from the bombed domes live there now. Landed one of my stargazers there, and by now she'll have killed several of their corporation's presidents with a Jedi sword. Where did you get? Lannery asked, but then it fell into place. Kara. Greenwood Station will be blamed for the murders, and its alliance with the Jedi, Dale said, his expression unchanging. Skirmishes are common on Nox, and it won't be the first conflict between Newell Tandor and another dome. Covering your tracks, Lannery said. Dale shrugged. Behind him, his stargazers had wrapped the device in the sheet. It did not seem at all heavy, and the Twi'lek held it to her chest. They were waiting for Dale to leave. Just like you did on Tython, Lannery continued. One hand delved into her utility belt beneath the robe, rolling the item she sought between thumb and forefinger. A tracker, small and sharp. Leaving your bloodied clothes for me to find. Letting our family believe you dead. I liked being dead, Dale said. It gave me freedom from your constant efforts to push the Force on me when I never, ever wanted it. Another low rumble and a vibration from above. Soon I'll be believed dead again and gone from here. Free to pursue my own fate. Dale, you don't know what... I should kill you. Dale pulled a blaster from beneath his robe and stood with it pointing down at the floor. He was incredibly still, like a statue. Even his eyes seemed to have died. He's inside, Lannery thought, and she wondered what he was finding in there, what he was thinking and the decisions he was making, and she knew that now was the time to push. She would push hard and violently, smashing aside those mental defenses he might believe he had built against her. But I can't, Dale said. He turned aside and holstered his blaster. Lannery brought out her hand and flicked the tracker, closing her eyes, concentrating, and guiding it quickly across the room until it attached to Dale's right boot. Then she opened her eyes and looked around, but no one had seen anything. Perhaps she had been lucky. Perhaps. Dale did not even spare her a final glance. With a single nod at the Cathar, he left the room the same way Lannery and Tree had entered. The Twi'lek carrying the device followed, along with the human stargazer. The Cathar remained, gun aimed at Lannery. It was a heavy blaster, and its muzzle still glowed warm. Lannery clenched her fingers, readying a force punch. Try, the Cathar said. You know I can't just stand here and let him leave.
You won't be standing there for long.
Lannery twitched her finger, and a tool flipped from the wide table, clanging against the wall. The stargazer didn't even blink.
He doesn't want to hear you die, the Cathar said.
That's kind of my brother.
He is kind. The only kind man I've ever met.
Lannery glanced at the huddled, bloody bodies in the corner.
They were unkind, the Cathar said. They hid down here instead of looking to the stars.
She sensed movement from the other side of the room. She did not look, but she knew that Tree was stirring. He's going to kill everyone, she said. Once he initiates that device, the dark matter will form a black hole and everyone in the system...
He knows that won't happen. The stars call, they tell him.
Oh, so the stars speak to him, Lannery said, laughing softly. And he's not mad?
The Cathar blinked slowly, but she was not even putting a chink in his convictions.
Come on, Tree, she thought.
Tree groaned. The Cathar glanced his way. Lannery force-shoved with everything she had. Tools and loose components rattled across the table and flew at the Stargazer. A cabinet tipped and bounced across the floor. A hail of bolts and snipped wires became a stinging rain that raked across his chest and face, ripping skin and blinding him. She ducked down and force-punched, shoving the Cathar back against the wall beside the door. His blaster fired, the shot smashing a hole in the ceiling. Molten material and rock fragments showered down. Then the Stargazer clasped at his belt, weeping blood from ruptured eyes, and a look of ecstasy broke across his face.
Oh no, Lannery muttered.
She looked at Tree and saw that he was barely conscious, and with every shred of strength and effort she had of the Force, she reached for him and dragged him halfway across the room toward her. His eyes opened comically wide as he slid without being touched, and as he reached her and she clasped his clothing, Lannery shouted, "Bomb!" The explosion was deafening, shattering, assaulting her body and mind and senses, and she felt herself thrown around like a snowflake in a storm. With her parents, it was the arts. Her mother wrote the most beautiful poetry, and her father was a sculptor, his work venerated all across Mesera. But Lannery's calling lay in science and alchemy, and how the Force could be used for both. She discovers that at Aniel Kesh, and she revels in it. Master Dan Powell shows her the way. The Cathar Temple Master has taught at Aniel Kesh for 16 years, and at the end of their first long night of discussion, she tells Lannery that she has the potential to be her greatest pupil.
Do you say that to everyone? Lannery asks, proud but suspicious.
I've said it to no one before, Dan Powell replies.
Over the next few days, the studies begin, and Lannery is amazed. She immerses herself in Dan Powell's instruction, and in doing so, her troubles with Dale fade away. They don't disappear completely. There is always a shadow and a sense of impending change in her life. But she sleeps better than she has since leaving home, feels happier, and realizes that her mind has always been too focused on her brother. Dan Powell makes her understand that this is her great journey as well. And though Lannery cannot give up on Dale, for the first time, she places herself before him. With the chasm beneath them, Aniel Kesh has a different feel from all the other temples. Every moment there is rich, filled with potential, and edged with a sense of danger. Lannery has never felt so alive. It is as if the cells of her body are charged, her mind on fire. When she mentions this, Dan Powell smiles and nods.
We balance on the precipice of knowledge, she says. The unknown lies below us, always threatening to draw us down or rise up and swallow us. The Force is charged and powerful here. Anyone familiar can feel and sense it, but if you're powerful with the Force...
She grimaces and presses a fist to her forehead.
Sometimes it hurts, but it's a hurt worth weathering.
Dan Powell introduces her to sciences that Lannery has only ever heard or read about. She knows of Jedi who are disturbed by some of what occurs at Aniel Kesh, but she listens to the Master wide-eyed and with an open mind. She finds plenty to concern her, but so much more that fascinates. She's aware of Dan Powell's watching her carefully, taking stock. She is eager to please. In the storage pens in one of the temple's supporting arms are the altered animals. Taken from the Abyss of Ru, a dangerous place deep in the rift 600 kilometers to the east, these strange and fearsome creatures have been genetically manipulated using the Force to serve the Jedi. Lannery is amazed at the changes in them. None are hurt or damaged, and it's as if their alterations are the true wish of evolution. Dan Powell takes her through a network of laboratories. In one, weapons are altered and adapted using Force-driven metallurgy. In another,
Weapons specific to the Force are being tested. Chemicals are changed and transmuted. Solids have their structures reformed. And the wild power of the chasm beneath them is harnessed in thick-walled compounds, dancing and flashing, striking and snapping like a living thing. It is in the last room that Dan Powell shows her that Lannery knows her future lies. The talents needed for this are deep, the Jedi Master says. The risks great, but the rewards are huge. I'm going to teach you. Lannery stares at the two Jedi in the center of the room. Before each of them is a shape. Something that should not live, yet it flexes and breathes. A thing that should not be, yet here it is. Wrought from their own flesh and blood, Dan Powell says, and nurtured using the Force. Lannery is terrified and thrilled. She has heard of this, but never thought it was true. Never suspected she would see it for herself. The alchemy of flesh, she whispers. Despite her fear, she is eager to begin.
Tell me you can get us out of here.
Tree's voice. His urgency pulled her quickly back to her senses. That and the stench of sewage and death. Everything ached, and in a few places she hurt terribly. Her head still throbbed as if someone were jumping up and down on it. She smelled blood and knew it was her own. But Tree was far from gentle as he grabbed her beneath the armpits and tried to haul her upright. Lannery shoved him back and sent him stumbling into the shattered table. She looked around and tried to take stock. It looked bad. The Cathar Stargazer had exploded his suicide vest, demolishing the wall and bringing down most of the ceiling. The doorway was blocked by torn metal and smashed stone, and fractured rock had fallen behind it. The rest of the ceiling was spattered with his blood, a great swath of it burned black by the bomb's fire flash. The remainder of the large room was a mess. Scientists' bodies scattered from the corner where they'd been massacred. Tools and components everywhere. The large central table ruptured and splintered. If she hadn't pulled Tree behind there with her, they'd have both died. There was a wide crack in one wall, and through this seeped a steady stream of effluent. A pipe or chute had been ruptured somewhere, and the leak was speeding up rather than slowing down.
Look, Tree said, pointing. Another door there!
He was almost shouting, and blood ran from his ears. Lannery also heard the fading whine from her tortured eardrums, but that was the least of her worries.
That Cathar's bomb can't have done that, she said, pointing at the rent in the wall.
It was on the opposite side of the room from the doorway the explosion had blocked.
There was another explosion when I was trying to wake you, Tree said. Far away! Up there! To feel it down here, it must have been big. What's happening? What if we started?
A war, and Dale started it. Come on, we've got to stop him leaving Greenwood Station.
I feel sick, Tree said. It stinks. My head hurts. I think my skull might be...
I'll break it myself, Lannery said. Come on, help me with this door.
She searched the room for her sword, knowing she would not find it, mourning its loss. Tem Madog himself had forged that sword for her. She'd rather have lost an arm. Perhaps it had been dropped somewhere beyond that blocked doorway. Or maybe Dale had taken it with him. They tried the door, but it was electronically locked.
Cover your ears, Lannery said.
She concentrated on the lock and force shoved, crushing the mechanism and shorting the circuits. The door slid open, and a flood of sewage washed in around their feet. She and Tree clasped hands to keep their balance.
The thought of falling into that mess.
When the levels of filth had equalized, they left the room and emerged into one of Pan Deep's corridors. It was long and empty, and several other doors led off it. They were all closed, marked only with laboratory numbers, and Lannery had no wish to open them. Soft, reactive lighting glowed behind ceiling panels, and on the walls were touch panels, 3D holo screens, and several indentations that might have housed implement printers. This was advanced tech for a place so hidden away. The money pumped into Pan Deep must have been vast. They saw no one else. Perhaps the 6 murdered scientists were the only ones who worked here. Or maybe Dale had paid others to stay away.
Not much of a head start, she thought. But he'll know his way up. Would have an escape route planned from here and from the city. She could barely believe the enormity of the events that Dale had set in motion. Initiating a battle between 2 domes, cities whose specialty was the design and manufacture of weapons of war, was as good as murdering the battle's victims himself. All to cover his tracks. It was brutal. It was inhuman. He claimed freedom from the Force, but willingly removing himself from its influence had made him a monster. Pandeep was not as large as she'd imagined. At the end of the corridor, they emerged into a rough cavern, at the other end of which a string of lights led into a tunnel that sloped slowly upward. The cavern floor was swilling with sewage, and the stink was almost unbearable, but Lannery knew that a person could get used to a lot in extreme circumstances. Even Tree was surprising her. He'd quickly stopped complaining and wiped the blood from his face and ears, and now he nudged her shoulder and pointed.
Think he'll have set traps?
He thinks we're dead, she said.
Another blast rumbled down from above, spilling grit and dust from the cavern ceiling. From somewhere close by came a shattering, grinding crack, shaking the floor and setting the air itself vibrating.
And we don't have time for caution, Lannery said. I think they're using plasma bombs up there. We've got to get clear of Greenwood Station and back to the Peacemaker, or this will be our grave.
Laid to rest in a bath of shack, Tree said. Well, I guess I had it coming.
Lannery laughed out loud. Tree's eyes went wide with surprise. And then they ran. It was a journey through a nightmare. Flowing sewage, crumbling walls, 3 security grills that Lannery had to force shove open before they could continue. And what made it worse was the uncertainty of what they were moving toward. The farther they went, the louder the noises of battle. But they had little choice. Frustration and fear drove her on. Not fear for herself so much as for the countless people who Dale's scheme would put at risk, and not only those now dying in the conflict initiated here. Seeing the shape of the device beneath the dust sheet had been strange, that something so small might contain such energies. The pursuit had clouded her thoughts about the Hypergate, and the truth or not of its existence. But seeing Dale again, and his madness, and being so close to the device that might be born of greed technology, had all combined to focus her thoughts. It was just possible that the device would work, which would be amazing, and the consequences of that she could not allow herself to consider. But it was much more likely that it would doom them all. The farther they fled from beneath the massive tower's foundation, the greater the impact of the explosions. When she reached her Peacemaker, she would contact the Jedi Council and tell them of events here, and maybe they could intervene in time to prevent a greater tragedy. But doing so might be admitting their continued interest in Greenwood Station and the laboratories and expertise of Pandeep. Perhaps they would be happier to let the domed city meet its fate and fade away from memory. Their route took them upward, and Tree commented several times that they should have already reached street level. But they had no time to pause, and when Lannery consulted her wrist unit, the schematics were confused. She could not pin down their location on the plans. People passed by them in both directions, none sparing them a glance. They were all wide-eyed and scared. At last, they reached a set of heavy blast doors. Lannery used the Force to fry their controls, and Tree found a heavy iron bar to pry them open. Heat and noise flooded in, the stenches and sounds of chaos, and Lannery stumbled through onto a wide balcony several stories above the ground. They had emerged just above the base of the central tower, overlooking Greenwood Station's western side. The sounds, sights, and chaos of war were almost overwhelming. They were confronted with a scene that took their breaths away.
Chapter 14. Sad History. Perhaps there is a madness in remaining on Tython while not strong in the Force. One would not submerge long beneath the surface of the sea if one did not possess gills. One would surface,
one would escape. So to stay here now, that way, insanity lies.
Unknown Typhon, circa 9,000 TYA, Thoyor arrival. When Master Dam Powell knocks on her door and disturbs her from sleep, Lannery knows that something is wrong. She has been expecting it, like the sense of imminent danger always apparent at Anil Kesh because of the chasm below. Her own perception of Dale has been of a coiled spring. Now the time has come. Dale has sprung.
"He's a fool,"
Dam Powell says as they march along the corridor.
"I saw trouble in him the moment you arrived, as did Master Kinnaid."
"At Stav Kesh?" Lannery asks.
"Of course. You think the Jedi Masters don't talk among ourselves about those on their great journeys?"
"What has he done?" Lannery asks.
"He fled into the Abyss of Rue. Put lives in danger."
"He's gone?" breathes Lannery.
"Oh no, not gone. They pulled him out and are bringing him back. They're just coming in to land."
Dam Powell climbs a staircase, and a heavy door slides open before her. Wind roars, rain splashes in across the floor, and force lightning thrashes about the square of night sky revealed.
"Oh, Dale, what have you done?"
Lannery thinks. He has been gone for 4 days, taken with others by Master Quan Jang on a visit to the Riftlands to collect specimens for the alchemical labs here at Anil Kesh. At first, she welcomed his absence. It gave her the opportunity to study in peace with no concerns about what Dale might be doing. But her dreams these past 3 nights had been troubled. It was almost as if she knew that something terrible was going to happen. She follows the Jedi Master outside. There is someone else out there already, standing at the edge of the platform and looking east. A cloud chaser is visible, drifting down toward one of Anil Kesh's landing zones.
"Master,"
the young man says, turning to greet them. He barely glances at Lannery.
"Master Quan Jang reports that the journeyer said nothing, but he appears fit and well."
"Good," Dam Powell says. "The others?"
"Sickened from their time in the Abyss."
He looks pointedly at Lannery then.
"It is a place of dark, dangerous energies."
Lannery glances over the handrail and looks down into the chasm. She feels woozy, and it's Dam Powell's hand that steadies her.
"Breathe long and deep,"
the Master whispers.
"The Force is very strong in you, and so the chasm plays with you."
"That's what you think it is?" Lannery asks. "Playing?"
Dam Powell smiles enigmatically.
"A turn of phrase."
"So what will happen?"
"Happen?"
"To Dale."
It's the other Jedi who replies.
"We ensure that he's fit and well, unharmed from his escapades, and then we will arrest him and escort him from Anil Kesh first thing in the morning."
"Escort him where?"
The Jedi's face is grim.
"Once beyond the temple, he can go where he wishes."
"Banishment," Lannery says.
"I think we'll actually be saving his life."
"So is this how my brother's sad story ends?" Lannery wonders.
But she thinks not. Dale has a weight to him, increasing the farther he removes himself from the Force. In her dreams, at their worst, his end comes with terrible greatness.
"I'd like to wait here for him," she says.
The cloud chaser has touched down now, visible between skeins of low cloud.
"Speak to him when he arrives."
"I'll wait with you."
The Jedi bows.
"Journeyer Scott Yoon."
Lannery starts to object, but she realizes it was not a request.
"Lannery Brock," she says.
"I know."
Scott Yoon smiles.
"Afterward, bring him down to me,"
Dam Powell says.
"I'll go to make sure the medical bay is ready to receive those others still sickening."
Yoon bows his head as the Master turns and leaves. Lannery watches her go, surprised at Dam Powell's confidence in Dale's well-being.
"I'll fetch your jacket for you,"
Yoon says.
"It can grow cold out here."
It takes Quan Jang and the others a surprisingly long time to reach the temple from the landing zone. Yoon tries talking, but Lannery is too distracted and troubled to enter into any meaningful conversation. Most of the time she stands with her eyes closed, her thoughts her own. It is Yoon who finally announces their arrival. They arrive at the temple on foot, Master Quan Jang in the lead. There are 10 people behind him, 3 being carried on stretchers. Even though she sees Dale with them, he seems to walk alone.
"I'll go to meet them," Yoon says. "Wait here and I'll bring your brother."
Lannery waits and watches. They climb the leg onto the temple, and Yoon meets them at the far end of the viewing platform. Dale seems even more apart from them all than she first thought. There is no expression on his face, and he doesn't seem to acknowledge where he is at all. He's more hurt than Master Dan Powell let on, Lannery thinks. But she still wants him close so that she can assess his condition for herself. And she realizes that though it has only been 4 days, she has missed her brother. Quan Jang and the others move off into the temple, and Yoon touches Dale's shoulder. Then the two of them walk toward Lannery, across the viewing platform that is buffeted by winds from below and heavy, warm raindrops from above. "Dale," she says as they reach her, but his expression gives her pause. So serious. So adult. There's something expanded about him, as if since she saw him last he has grown to fit the world he will live in. He seems assured, too, and confident, even though his skin appears burned, his eyes puffy and red.
"I came to say goodbye, Lannery," he says.
The words are strange and unexpected. He turns to leave, and Scott Yoon stands before him.
"You're to be arrested, and..."
the journeyer begins.
"There are such depths," Dale says.
He is speaking directly to Lannery. She wonders whether these are the last words they will ever share.
"What did you see?"
she asks.
"Things you never can."
His eyes are so bright they seem to glow.
"Such promises and opportunities down in the abyss. Such depths of history and potential. And now I must go elsewhere to find something more. And so..."
"Dale and Brock," Yoon says, "you're to accompany me to..."
Dale strikes out. Lannery sees it coming and is surprised that Yoon did not. But though the journeyer may be comfortable at Anil Kesh, he has yet to visit Stav Kesh to learn the martial arts. Dale's fist connects with his chin, and as Yoon leans back, Dale spins and kicks him in the face. Another punch as he falls, and Lannery hears bones break even before Yoon strikes the metal platform.
"Dale!"
Lannery shouts, but she sees her brother's determination. "I cannot lose him now!" She goes for him, reaching out, wishing to hold him and try to undo everything that has passed between them since leaving home. It is a naive wish, and one that suits a child more than the Jedi woman Lannery is becoming. But familial love is a powerful force in itself. From the corner of her eye, she sees Scott Yoon lift himself on one elbow and then raise his other hand, pointing toward Dale.
"No!" she shouts. "Don't try to..."
She will always wonder whether her voice gave Dale warning, and whether, in fact, she wanted that. The moment she speaks, Dale crouches and spins on one heel, his robe billowing as he brings one hand out from beneath its folds. His blaster coughs. Scott Yoon cries out and is shoved across the platform by the impact. Blood bursts from his back, and his clothing smokes.
"Dale,"
Lannery breathes, feeling weak and suddenly hopeless. This is the point when everything goes too far.
"Goodbye, Lannery," he says again.
And then he is gone, dashing across the platform and climbing a sloping ladder fixed into the temple's curved wall. She should stay to help Yoon. She kneels briefly by his side and examines the wound, and though still breathing, she knows that he will not survive. Lannery should stay to tell Master Dan Powell what has happened. But instead, she chases her brother. Up onto the temple's high wall, across its curved roof where deep ditches channel water and moss makes the surface treacherous. Following his distant shadow through the increasing downpour until he scurries down one of the massive legs towards solid ground. Her first great journey ends, and her pursuit of her brother begins.
Your brother did this?
Tree gasped.
So he said. But how?
A word in the right ear? A rumor? A threat? A challenge? A murder?
It's monstrous. It's terrifying.
Lannery could not argue. The air was filled with violence. Smoke, screams, the pounding and roaring of weapons, and the groaning and grinding of the giant dome under stress. They had emerged onto a balcony just above the base of the central tower. To the west was the previously damaged area of the dome, with its massive buttresses and chaotic-looking repairs sealing it from the toxic air outside. And to the south, an attack was underway. Several large parts of Greenwood Station's dome had been destroyed, the ragged holes still smoking and dropping burning molten detritus to the buildings and streets far below. The dome's atmosphere screamed as it was vented to the outside, as if in distress at mixing with the toxic clouds beyond. At the nearest of these wounds in the protective skin, Lannery could see several large, bulky shapes, battle droids, hunkered low by the hole and firing laser cannons into the city. The barrage seemed to be indiscriminate, and many fires were already taking hold. The battle droids edged forward and the first of them dropped, retros beneath its many arms firing to ease its descent. A missile streaked from the tower above them and struck the droid. It bloomed fire, fell out of sight into a manufacturing district and exploded. More missiles curved away from the tower, sweeping in graceful arcs and impacting the dome around the shattered area above. Some droids erupted in fiery death. Others tumbled across the outside of the dome. More dark shapes replaced them, and the barrage began again. At another smashed section, an attack ship hovered. A plasma cannon started pulsing into the ground close to the column's base. Each impact was huge and shook the city, the ground, the air itself. Explosions of fire and smoke mushroomed up, and Lannery could not help wondering how many people were dying with each impact. Beneath the central column, she thought, just where Dale would have told them Pan Deep lay. More rockets were fired from the tower, but as they approached the dome's underside, they evaporated into clouds of blazing white vapor. The attack ship had defenses. Lannery could hardly imagine the destruction involved if it succeeded in getting inside. "We've got to go!" Tree shouted above the noise, grabbing her arm. The balcony vibrated with each impact, and if the attack ship shifted its targeting by just a few degrees... "Come on," Lannery said. She grasped Tree's hand as he pulled away, squeezed to calm him. "Trust me!" Then she hauled him to the edge of the balcony and tipped over. Any normal person would have been killed instantly by the fall. But Lannery eased them down with the force, slowing their descent and landing them with barely a jolt on the street below. People ran around them in confusion and terror. No one even seemed to notice them. "Don't ever do that again!" Tree shouted, almost hysterical. "Next time I won't hold your hand!" Lannery ran, and Tree went with her. Far to the south, hidden by smoke and the haze of many weapons, a ground battle seemed to be taking place. She could not make out the details, but she could just see the sparking impacts of artillery fire speckling the outside of the dome's shell several kilometers in the distance, and the constant thump, thump of returning fire sang through the air. Hundreds of bright lights dropped from punctures in the dome. Battle droids, or perhaps even ground assault troops. A much heavier impact sounded, like Nox itself shrugging. Lannery felt a deep vibration that set buildings swaying. Glass smashed, wreckage showered down all around as weaker buildings started to break down. The air inside the dome seemed to momentarily blur, and outside the city's huge skin, the skies lit up.
"Incoming plasma bombs," Lannery said. "They're being diverted for now, but they'll get through soon enough."
"So how can you help?"
"Help?
You're a Jedi, aren't you?"
"We're not magicians, Tree. You know that as well as anyone."
"But this is..."
"We get out," Lannery said, "as fast as we can. Dale thinks we died down there, and all this is just to make sure. Whatever escape route he had is hidden to us, and he'll be away and gone by now. But this, what he's caused or initiated, is all for nothing. Because we're going to survive, and we know he's still alive.
Look!
Tree pointed. In the distance to the north, a section of dome had slid open, and several ships rose from across the city and headed for the outside. Lannery could tell from the way they moved that they were battleships, not civilian transports. This was not yet an evacuation. As the first ship passed through the dome opening, it exploded, blossoming into a ball of fire and erupting ammunition that rained down in a beautiful, awful shower across that part of the city. The other warships powered through the destruction, another of them exploding outside and then impacting the dome half a kilometer away. The others rose clear, and though they were little more than blurred shapes beyond the dome, Lannery saw them swing around and streak to the south. Come on, she said. I don't think we have long.
Until what?
Until we're a part of Greenwood Station's tragedy.
Lannery led the way. She headed for the portion of Dome already bombed years ago by the Jedi. What she had learned of Pan Deep, that the Jedi had spared it because they commissioned high-end military tech themselves, did not sit well with her. But it was not relevant to her mission to consider that right now. And she, more than anyone, knew that the Jedi often harbored secrets. She spoke into her comlink.
Iron Hogs, prepare the ship for takeoff. There's trouble. We'll be coming in fast. Initiate ship's defenses. Shoot anything that comes close that isn't us. Got that?
Her ship's droid crackled and spat in reply.
And start the tracking scanner, frequency 240. You should find the signal soon enough, probably just off planet. Lock on and track it.
What signal?
Tree asked.
I put a tracker on Dale's clothing, she said. I just hope he hasn't found it.
Or changed his outfit.
Tree was trying to joke, but Lannery could not smile. Such a small thing as a change of clothing might doom everything she had ever known. She was already living in history in the making, the tragedy of Greenwood Station that would become known across the system. If she failed to catch Dale, and his attempt to initiate the Gree Tech went wrong, then everything would be history, and there would be no one left to know it.
There's still time, she thought, because she knew the device was not yet ready.
The scientist had mentioned that it needed charging. She'd sensed no energy source there, nothing that might indicate that its dark matter drive had been primed or loaded. She would have known. Her teachings with Dan Powell had given her an insight into such shadowy matters. An arcane device that only needed charging before it was ready. A tracking chip that might or might not remain on Dale. Everything was suddenly so nebulous and unreliable. A war played out around them as they fled. People ran back and forth in panic, parents herding children, adults running in shouting groups, but Lannery could see some organization starting to become apparent. Though they wore no sign or uniform, one group of men and women seemed to be part of some sort of Greenwood Station security force. They were breaking down the fencing around a compound housing several militarized cloud chasers, airships supporting heavy gun platforms, and with grav units fitted to landing gear to aid flight. As Lannery and Tree passed, the first of the airships started to hum with power. Other people bearing weapons rushed across the street ahead of them, heading south toward where the bulk of the fighting seemed to be taking place.
They'd do better to flee, Lannery said.
They're defending what they have, Tree said.
This is a full-on assault! Ultimate destruction! Not an invasion!
They paused beneath the cover of an old factory's slumping wall. Perhaps one day this place would have been repaired, but it looked like it hadn't been used for some time, and the building's metal framework was corroding beneath the toxic atmosphere.
Look! Invasion!
Tree pointed south at another cloud of lights drifting down from the many damaged areas of Dome. Gunfire was being exchanged, and it took several seconds for the crackling sound to become audible.
Droids, Lannery said. They're not sending troops in because...
A massive explosion rocked them from their feet. The ground pounded at her as she fell, and the air itself seemed to vibrate in her lungs through her chest. Lannery rolled against the building and looked back and up, astounded and sickened by what she saw. A plasma bomb had found its way through the city's defenses and impacted close to the dome's highest point, more than a kilometer above the ground. The explosion had ripped the dome open, the shattering destruction running down through the central column and bursting from it in blooming flowers of flame and blazing metal. The wide tower was crumbling from the top down, and around it, the dome's mammoth support structures were cracking and dipping, great spreads of dome rupturing and falling away. The explosion continued to expand, probing inward and touching the ground at last. A firestorm swept across the air, incinerating everything in its path. The destruction was so huge and so far away that it seemed to happen in slow motion.
Lannery!
Tree said. He grabbed her arm.
Lannery!
Yes, she said. Tree helped her up, and they moved on. They reached the building through which they'd entered the dome not so long ago. As they went inside, they left behind a very different Greenwood Station. They worked their way back through the ruined and hastily repaired area of the city, retrieving their masks from where Lannery had hidden them. But the masks had leaked away the last of their oxygen, so Lannery cast them both aside. "We've got a kilometer to go across that landscape," she said. "Follow me. Step where I step, run as fast as you can, and try not to take deep breaths."
"We'll die out there," Tree said.
"No, and once we're on the Peacemaker, I have medicine that will clean your skin and lungs."
"I don't have skin and lungs exactly like yours, human," Tree said, smiling nervously.
Lannery grabbed his shoulder, squeezed. "Close enough. Come on." She force-shoved the exterior airlock door open and ran out onto the toxic, poisonous surface of Nox. Behind them, the battle raged and the destruction continued. Out of the dome, they could see more, though the air was constantly hazed with stinking clouds of gas. Attack ships stood some distance off, firing at the dome. Way beyond the dome, a huge glow filled the sky, and Lannery guessed that the spaceport adjacent to the dome in the east had been bombed. Those few defensive ships that took off from inside and made it out without being destroyed streaked south toward the attackers, and most were blasted from the air before even entering combat. One or two made it through, spiraling up and around as their laser cannons opened up. Explosions bloomed. Burning wrecks arced down to the planet's surface. It was only the skill of their pilots that kept them aloft, but the attacking force appeared to be far superior. Lannery already felt the acidic burn on her skin and tasted it at the back of her throat, and the destruction and deaths behind her weighed heavy. Her spine tingled. The back of her neck smarted as if the accusing dead stared.
"Iron Hulks!"
The droid responded immediately. The ship was ready for takeoff. The tracker was acquired and locked on. But Dale's ship was already breaking away from orbit, and soon he would be beyond the range of their instruments. They reached the Peacemaker and boarded. And Lannery did not feel as pleased, as safe, as she should have. "Okay?" Lannery asked.
"Perfect."
Tree nodded, though he looked ready to vomit. His leku hung pale and sickly, and his eyes and nose were running.
"Strap in," Lannery said. "They'll probably see us lifting off and..."
Greenwood Station took three more direct impacts from plasma bombs. The blasts shook the Peacemaker, and Lannery quickly fired the engines and took her ship aloft, afraid that the explosions might cause tremors or eruptions around the city. She flicked on all sensors, checked systems, initiated weapon systems, and only then took time to look toward the dome. The ruptured dome was falling in great, burning, melting sheets. The city inside had become a pit of molten chaos, and billowing pillars of smoke and flame rose high above it. The sparkling, expanding clouds from the plasma impacts bloomed outward, and when they met the rank atmosphere, they formed sickly rainbows that in other circumstances might even have looked beautiful. Lannery punched it. And even flying up and away from the dying city, the stark flashes of its demise lit up the interior of the Peacemaker's cockpit.
"All those people,"
Tree said, and Lannery had never heard him sound so wretched.
"We went there, and this is the result."
"It wasn't us," Lannery said. "It was Dale."
"But if we hadn't chased him here..."
"If he's not stopped, this could happen everywhere," she said. "It shows how determined he is, and how mad." She lowered her voice, almost talking to herself now. There'll be no reasoning with him. A chime on the control panel, and Lannery groaned.
What?
Tree asked. Company. On the scanner, three sparks were following them, closing rapidly. Lannery banked the ship steeply and accelerated, the hull shaking around them, groaning with the huge stresses she was placing it under. But she knew her ship as well as she knew herself, its breaking points, its capabilities. Still, the shapes closed on them. Fighters from Nul Tandor, Lannery said.
And now they have a Jedi ship to add to their score sheet,
Tree said. I'll draw them out of the atmosphere. The Peacemaker's better in space.
I can shoot.
You told me you'd never been in space.
Well, maybe once or twice. But I've fired land-based laser cannons 100 times. I have a good eye.
Top turret. Go. Tree unclipped and scampered back into the living area, and Lannery charged up the laser cannons. And put on the comlink so we can talk, she shouted back at him. Strange. Right then, she was almost glad she had Tree here. She saw the terrible irony in the situation. Dale had made Nul Tandor believe that Greenwood Station was in league with the Jedi. Not only that, but some of that city's highest-standing residents might already have been assassinated by a Jedi sword. And now here they were, in the midst of their attack on Greenwood Station, and a Jedi was attempting to flee the planet, the Peacemaker ship giving her away. She had come here incognito, but might be leaving the seeds of a wider war behind. Right now, escape was her priority, and stopping Dale. Everything else could be smoothed over afterward. A few moments later, she heard the static and scratch of Tree turning on the comm headset in the top laser turret.
Okay, we're fired up. I think I have this. Foot pedals to turn the turret, tracking screen, combat display, touch trigger.
You damage my gun and I'll gut you!
Yeah, Jedi. You and which army?
Lannery laughed softly, always keeping her eyes on the closing targets. They had fanned out behind the Peacemaker and were approaching in a wide pincer. Soon the shooting would begin. Front cannons will be in my control, Lannery said. But I'll be busy flying this thing as well. You've got the best field of fire behind us, and you'll have visual.
I've got visual.
You see? Lannery was cut off by the dull thuds of the upper turret's laser cannons firing. Eyes on the screen, she twitched the ship to the left and hit the boosters. Then she switched on the Peacemaker's deflector shields and kept one hand hovering over their control lever. She'd have to angle the shields in accordance with which direction the next attack was coming.
Missed!
Tree shouted into her ears. She heard the gentle hum of the turret's motors working as Tree turned, and then the first ship streaked ahead of them. They were still in the upper reaches of the atmosphere. Lannery swung left, but heat flare glared across the windows, and she had to rely on scanners to keep tabs on the attacking Nul Tandor ships. They were fast and very maneuverable. Tree?
Can't see much. Think I winged it.
Lannery flicked a switch so that the targeting computer display sprang up before her. Even before locking on, she let off a burst of fire, strafing across where the lead ship might fly. It twitched left and climbed. She thrust forward with all the power the ship had, and the attackers fell back a little. But she knew hers would be a momentary lead. Their ships would be at least as fast as the Peacemaker.
Right,
Tree muttered, and his cannon let off several sustained bursts.
Yes! One down! One down!
Good shooting, Lannery said, but she was distracted. Shift deflector shield to the rear. Angle the ship out of the atmosphere. Keep an eye on trajectories and the bright sparks of the two remaining ships. Still talking to herself, even though Tree was there. For a moment, she wondered what she'd have done if he weren't with her. But then everything would have been very different. It was through his contacts on Nox that she'd been able to find Dale. The ship reached the highest extremes of Nox's polluted air, the stars speckling into view, and it was almost as if she felt it come alive in her hands. The Peacemaker was fine in atmospheres, but it was in the vacuum of space where it truly came into its own. We're away from Nox.
Good. I can see again.
Grav units phasing in.
Ah, great. There goes my stomach.
She grinned. They're following.
Didn't think they'd give up. You'd be a good prize.
And you?
I don't think they'd worry about...
The Peacemaker shook as a volley of shots smacked across its left flank.
Where'd that come from?
Two more from out of the sun.
Yeah, but...
His laser fired again, and he was muttering all the time. Words Lannery could not quite make out. On the scanner, she saw another ship flare briefly into a hail of smaller parts, then expand into a cloud, then fade away. Still three out there, she said. Another ship powered toward them, then disappeared. I've lost it.
Me too.
You can't see it?
No, gone. Can't you force see it or something?
Lannery ignored the quip and swung the ship sharply left and up, aiming for where she thought the ship might have gone. Climbing directly away from the Peacemaker and above them, it might for a moment have disappeared from her scanners, shielded by its exhaust and angle of climb. It was a good trick, but one Lannery knew. She'd used it once or twice herself. She saw the glimmer of starlight on metal before her scanner even picked it up. She closed her eyes and breathed deeply, comfortable in the force. Then she looked again, past the grid lines of the targeting computer, past the pulsing lights and scrolling figures of laser preparedness, target distance, altitude, and attitude. And when the time came, she touched the fire pad once. A single shot streaked ahead of them, and 8 kilometers away, the ship flowered into a blazing balloon.
Whoa! Good shot!
Those last two are coming in fast. One port, one starboard.
I'll take starboard.
The laser cannon thudded. Lannery took the ship through a roll and then powered directly up and away from Nox. Gravity grasped the vessel, as if sad to let go. The whole ship shook. She took manual control of the underside turret and swept it to port, watching the targeting grid on the left of her screen as the central 4 quadrants turned red. She fired several bursts, but already knew that she'd missed. Tree shouted,
"Look out, there!"
And then the whole ship shook as a plasma torpedo exploded 0.5 kilometers away, ignited by the ship's shielding system. Lannery let the blast tip the ship to starboard, knowing that fighting the effect would waste time and effort. Then she took control once again. "Everything at that port ship," she said, opening fire. Tree's cannon thumped, and she saw the streaking trails of laser blasts converging in the distance. On the scanner, the blooming star of destruction.
"Yes! One more down!"
"The other's making a run for it."
"Let's go! I'll put a shot into its afterburner!"
Lannery considered for a moment, then turned away from the fleeing ship. It was already 13 kilometers away, the distance between them growing fast. "No time," she said, "and no point." Tree was silent for a while. Then she heard his sigh. Relief, perhaps, and gratitude that they were still alive. "Stay up there a while," Lannery said. "They might have gotten a message off. Could be we have more company."
"Yeah."
Lannery muted the comm. In truth, there would be no more company, because she'd blocked the fighters' communications as soon as she'd seen them. But she wanted to take a moment on her own, compose herself, submit herself to the Force and every soothing, empowering aspect it meant to her. She breathed deeply and took a final look back down at Nox. Even from this far out, the dying city of Greenwood Station was the largest, most obvious feature on the planet they were leaving behind. Chapter 15. Randan's Folly.
"Jedi must know their limits. There are places we should not go, things we should not do, powers we should not seek. The Force has an incredible strength, but a Jedi's true strength is in knowing when to use it, and when not."
Master Shalmar, A Life in Balance, 7541 TYA, Thoyor Arrival. She chases him across Tulse, alone, without weapons or supplies or equipment, following his trail where she can find it, doing her best to sense his presence and direction when she cannot, and it is 3 days before she has an inkling of where he is heading. Lannery knows she should not have simply run. She should have waited for Dan Powell, and now fears what the Jedi Master will think of her. But she is confident that she will not be a suspect in Scott Yoon's murder. And if she is, the time will come to put things right. Lannery is doing what she can to avoid losing her brother forever. Everything feels unreal, nightmarish. Dalian is a murderer. She has been made to grow up, and her world has changed forever. Tals is a wild, sparsely populated land, and the farther south she goes, the more alien the landscape becomes. It is sometimes called the Dark Continent, and she is beginning to understand why. She descends from the hills onto a wide, endless plain, almost devoid of any plant growth over waist height. She wonders why for a while, and then half a day across the plain, the first of the winds strikes. An initial gust steals Lannery's breath and knocks her sideways, and she curls into a ball against a low rock as the most powerful wind she had ever known rips across the landscape. The tall, thin grasses that she has come to hate, her lower legs and hands are crisscrossed with cuts from the grass's sharp tips and sheer edges, whip around her, lying almost flat across her body, and yet weathering the storm. She feels the dribble of blood from fresh grass-cut wounds, and now lying down, her face is lacerated as well. She struggles to breathe. All the time she is trying to make herself as small as possible and find as much shelter as she can behind the rock, she fears that Dale will continue walking through the storm. She pushes for him, taking comfort in flowing with the Force. He is somewhere ahead, his mind a riot of confusion. It has been the same since leaving Anil Kesh, and Lannery is not certain whether it is intentional. He knows her so well, knows how she will try to reach him. Perhaps this is his best defense. Just before dusk, the winds start to ease, and she stands and hurries on. She is thirsty, hungry, and cold. Frost sheens countless blades of grass, hardening them, forming a landscape of glimmering jewels for as far as she can see in every direction. It is beautiful, and is like wading through a sea of blades. Dale, stop. For me, she thinks, pushing the thought as hard as she can ahead of her. There is no telling whether he hears. She has come to believe that the old city might be his destination. That's where the true Typhons lived, he used to say. So little was known of the city and its former inhabitants that she could not argue, and he had built a romanticized view of those tumbled ruins, pyramids, and the unplumbed depths of its caverns and canals. Some say the Gree built the old city and lived there for tens of millennia. Others postulate that the Gree merely borrowed the place for a while, and that its true builders were lost forever to the mists of deep history. It is a mystery, and mysteries of the past are what Dale seeks. The old city lies in the southern regions of Tals, a wild, remote place called the Red Desert, frequented only by explorers and those desiring to leave civilization behind. It's said that the blood spites stalk the nights and haunt the underground. It is rumored that they are half plant, half animal, untouchable by Jedi talents, and that they feed on warm blood. She feels a frisson of fear when she thinks of it. Once there, what will Dale do? She cannot know. Perhaps he doesn't know either, and in that doubt might be her one chance to win him back. But he's a murderer. She tries to ignore the thought. She will confront that fully when she finds him, and decide what to do then. Confused, conflicted, Lannery finally leaves the plains of slashing grass and chases her brother into the first rolling dunes of the Red Desert. At dawn the next day, Lannery shivers awake from a dream. She is down in the darkness beneath the Red Desert. The weight of the old city hangs around her, crushing her from all directions with its enigmatic history and a million untold tales. She is in a network of elaborate caverns, all of them illuminated by flickering firelight burning somewhere out of sight. The walls and ceilings are beautifully inlaid with pictograms of the timeless Gree, and though she is certain they tell of long-forgotten histories, she cannot perceive the true stories. It's as if even with the truth laid out before her, she can never understand what happened here. And then the blood spites appear. Soundless, deadly, bat-like things, the size of her head, with clasping tendrils and dripping teeth. She has no hope of fighting them off. They circle her in the confined spaces, darting in and biting chunks from her face, her neck, her waving arms. She feels no pain, but her blood flows. She cries out for help. Her brother watches from the shadows. Lannery sits up and stares up at the wide, star-speckled sky. The dream is already fading, as most dreams do, and she recognizes the blood spites from the few times she has read about them and how she imagines them to be. She has never seen any hollows or pictures. In her dream, they are monsters, but the real beast merely watched. It's a chilling sensation. As she rekindles her fire and looks for food and water, using survival skills taught to her by her parents from a young age, the idea of Dale as a monster does not fade. Her dream spills into waking hours. Or perhaps in dreams, she could merely see the truth. She has only slept for a short time, and she hurries to pick up Dale's trail again. Trying to recall maps and legends of the Red Desert, she calculates that the old city might be 80 kilometers farther to the south. And though she has lost Dale's physical trail, she is now certain that the ruin is his destination. Lannery has always been fit, and she starts to run out across the larger dunes and into the Red Desert. She runs for 10 hours, pausing now and then in areas of ragged plant growth to dig for water. She overturns rocks and eats bugs and ants, and at one stage, she scares some desert wraths from a recent kill. The meat is rich and tough, and she eats it raw. The Red Desert is beautiful and daunting, barren and silent. It is a place that would inspire poets and madmen, and she does her best to remain inwardly focused as well as outwardly alert. It would be easy to lose oneself out here. Her sense of who she is remains firm, and there is a familiarity that gives her great comfort. The Force, strong in every sun-bleached rock and grain of sand. Just before dusk, she sees the first ruin. It is a tumbled wall at the base of a gentle slope, little more than a pile of blocks half-buried by shifting desert sands. But it is obviously not a natural formation. And the cold chill the sighting provokes convinces her that she is almost there. Lannery climbs the slope, and toward its summit she sees footprints. Pausing, she looks around, but Dale is nowhere in sight. She places her hand, fingers splayed, across one boot print in the sand, and closes her eyes. But the sands here are hot and ever-moving, and imbued with a timeless history, the breath of which startles her upright. Dale, we shouldn't be here. It is the first time she has spoken aloud since leaving Anil Kesh 3 days before. Nothing answers. Reaching the top of the hill, she emerges into the last of the day's sunlight once again. A kilometer to the west, the sun sinking into its ruin as if that place has always been its home, lie the sprawling remains of the old city. Wishing desperately that everything could be different, Lannery walks toward it. As she enters the shadow of the old city's largest pyramid, the first blood spite attacks. In the Peacemaker, pursuing Dale and his stargazers past Malterra's orbit and towards Sunspot, Trisana was quieter than Lannery had ever known him. But she did not question his silence. They had seen terrible things, witnessed a tragedy of shattering proportions. And though she knew of his past as a bad man, Tree's shock could not be feigned. The tracker seemed to be working well, and Lannery had plotted the projected course of Dale's ship 3 times. Each time the destination came out the same. Sunspot. And she thought she knew why. The incredible device had been built for the stargazers by the scientists of Pan Deep, but to charge it with its driving force, Dale had to visit Sunspot. The mines there were deep and incredibly dangerous, but the rewards for working there were great. Exotic elements that could be used for fuel or weapons. Crystals that sang with force power. And perhaps, exposed to the correct technology, a touch of dark matter. Dale's ship had an 8 million kilometer head start. Lannery had tried plotting a more direct course to Sunspot, but following Dale would be the fastest route. She had pushed her Peacemaker to its greatest speeds, aware that the modification she had commissioned made it one of the fastest ships in the system. Yet Dale remained out of reach, matching her speed, forging the fastest route to meet Sunspot on its quick orbit of their star, Tythos. Settled into their route, Lannery initiated a contact with Master Dan Powell. It took a while for the signal to be acknowledged, and a while longer for the chime of an incoming connection.
"Lannery,"
Dan Powell said, and even before the flat screen snowed in to show her face, Lannery knew that the Master knew. "I can't believe he did it. Just to cover his tracks. To make others think he was dead."
"Perhaps there's more to it than that,"
the Jedi Master said. She looked tired and drawn, and Lannery could only imagine the conversations she had been having with the Jedi Council. The diplomatic fallout with Nox, the efforts to calm a volatile situation. But that was beyond Lannery. She had to stay focused. "What more?" she asked.
"He must have shared rare knowledge with Pandeep for them to make his device. To ensure his uniqueness, he'd have to kill them all."
"But the whole of Greenwood Station? It's monstrous."
"Not everyone died. Some transports got away before the final strike."
"How many were lost?"
"So many that the numbers mean little."
The Master sighed heavily. Then she seemed to gather herself.
"So, what progress have you made?"
"Dale and the Stargazers are traveling to Sunspot, I believe to arm the device. I have a trace on him and I'm following, but I'm hours behind."
"You can't get in range to destroy his ship?"
"And kill my brother?" Lannery thought, but she could not share that thought. "No, Master. Whoever is funding his madness bought him quite a special ship. I can't read its signature, but it wouldn't surprise me to discover it's Jedi."
"Stolen?"
"I can tell you more soon."
"Sunspot and Molterra approach each other in their orbits,"
Dan Powell said, frowning.
"You know what happens once those planets draw close. Magnetic interference, space storms. Any space travel in their region will be impossible."
"Then he's timed this to the heartbeat," Lannery said. "He's planned everything in great detail. I'll have to catch him on Sunspot."
"Do anything you have to, Lannery."
"Of course."
"Anything."
The Master's gaze softened. Lannery did not reply for a moment, and the silence between them was loaded. Then she thought of that madness of Dale's that she had barely touched down in Pandeep, and how all-consuming it had felt.
"Be strong, Lannery. I know you are. But the responsibility is heavy. The price of failure might be unimaginable. So be strong. Experiences like this, such tragedies, can be what makes a good Jedi great. May the Force go with you."
Lannery nodded and broke the communication. She remained sitting in the cockpit for some time, thinking things through, saddened and afraid. And she surprised herself by finding comfort in Tree's presence. Her Twi'lek companion came to sit in the seat beside her. The last time they'd traveled like this, there had been a lightness to him, a protective bluster. No more. The silence was heavy, yet neither of them broke it. Lannery checked the ship's systems and kept an eye on the scanner, always aware of him sitting silently alongside. It was a long while after her communication with Dan Powell that Tree spoke at last.
"I feel sick."
"As do I," she said. "Whatever Dale has become, I can't believe he would..."
"No, I mean..."
Tree